Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's of a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. It is the Savage Nation. Let me tell you the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile, who crashed my Jaguar. But first, we have to listen to Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd. Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd on the Savage Nation Desafinado to set the mood and the time. Oh, I know what you're expecting, but you're not going to get it from me. You'll have to go to one of the other talk show hosts to get Obama's a Marxist and McCain is a war hero. If that's what you want from now until November, you're in the wrong you're on the wrong dial position. It's over. Leave me alone with it already. I really don't care anymore. I'll talk to you about it after the election. That is, unless there's a revelation here and now. It's enough already. Can we get on with our lives instead of focusing on these narcissistic egomaniacs who want to crash the country into the rocks even further? Please, listen to Desafinado, will you, by Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd. And I will tell you the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile who crashed my Jaguar. So as the music fades away, I want to take you back in time to a childhood story. Of course, it's a teenage story at this point. I had a friend whose father was a shady podiatrist, as you can tell by the title of the story. And he had a weird podiatry practice in the back of his apartment in, I think it was Sunnyside, Queens, somewhere in that area. I have no idea what the man did in the back. He was a very strange father. Everybody was afraid of the guy. You'd go, and he was very tall. The father was very tall. He dressed kind of shabbily, but upscale. But it was all tattered, and he always had a weird look on his face. And when the father was not in the apartment, the son, who became the Anglophile later on to cover up his origins, would take you in his father's podiatry studio, clinic, or whatever it was, office. And he'd say with a snicker, "I want you to see my father's rack," where he stretched people or something. And there was always something weird about this guy's podiatry practice. I don't even know what a podiatrist did. Something to do with the feet, but I think this guy did something with another part of the anatomy by implication. Now, you speed the clock up. The son who grows up in this shady apartment with a shady father, who was off-beaten, guy didn't become a real doctor, has to, throw dirt on his origins. So he becomes more Brooks Brothers than anybody we know. He adopts an English accent, and the last I heard, he had married a rich girl, oh, this is a long time ago, and became a banker with the umbrella and the whole deal. Now, there's another element to the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile, which is my Jaguar XK150. Prior to the time that he became a pure Anglophile, he was still my friend, but that's before I left New York. And I had an XK150 Jag that I'll never forget. I love that car more than, well, most cars. You can, who remembers what car you love and this and that. But When I say I love that car, you got to remember something. We're limited by our language, English. English has one word for love. I love my car. I love my mother. I love my wife. I love my dog. I love this pizza. I love my new shoes. We're stuck with one verb. In Latin, there are 16 verbs for love, each one slightly more descriptive depending upon the type of love we're talking about. So when I say I love the Jaguar, it's not like I love my dog or any of the other things I mentioned. Well, one night we were partying in the podiatrist's son's apartment. The father, I think, was taking advanced rack stretching lessons somewhere in the Grenada. And as kids would do, we got drunk and probably some other things were used at the party, who knows what. And he said, hey, can I drive your Jag? It must have been 2 o'clock in the morning. And you know, you're a kid. Yeah, here's the keys. So he takes the car out on Queens Boulevard, 2 o'clock in the morning in Queens. And, you know, he raced it out as fast as he could go. And his heart's pounding. He's sitting at a traffic light after, you know, he did this long run. The light's red. He stopped. All of a sudden, he looks in this tiny two-inch mirror that the Jags came with, and he sees a car careening right at the rear of the car. But before he could get the car in first, clutch it, gear it, and get out of there, crash, bang, boom, smashed in. The back of the car is broken off. And, of course, I've reversed the story. I think it was his Jaguar, and I was driving it, and I got hit from the rear. I really don't remember at this point whose car it was, but I do know who hit us. To this day, and I'm not making this up, you know, I know the guy's name. I remember it. He was an Iraqi. I swear to you. It was very odd because I didn't know of Iraqis at that time. But he was an Iraqi national with a pure – his name was not Saddam Hussein. I know that. Nor was it one of the junior Husseins. But it was an Iraqi national who crashed the Jaguar and broke its back. And, of course, that was that. Our friendship ended soon thereafter. Yes, it was his car. He came and saw it, and the back was broken off the car, and he started to almost cry. He didn't cry like a sissy, but he wept. And he said, you broke the back of my car. I said, I didn't mean it. I was sitting there. And that's the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile. Now play Desafinado, and I'll tell you why I told you that story. Actually, this song has more meaning to me than the story, because I remember when this song came out. I don't know if I can tell that story. Is that illegal? One of the girls in the crowd had a sister who was a Playboy bunny. She was older. She must have been 22. We were 17, 18, 19. Now, I want to tell you, Playboy bunny then was a Playboy bunny. Today, it has no meaning. Today, they look like skanks from the lowest levels of the sewer. I mean, you watch that show with that old degenerate bum. I mean, this guy should be. Let's just stop right there. I never saw anything like these skanky broads he has in that mansion of his. What is so interesting about these lowlife bimbos he has with him? But in those days, a Playboy bunny was really something. I mean, they were the top of the heap. At least that's how guys saw her. Who knows what they really were? They probably like every other woman on earth. You know, if they had a good figure, they became a Playboy bunny. As long as they did the right producer meet, you know. Well, this song was very popular at that time, you see, and she was 22. And everybody in the crowd wanted to get next to the Playboy bunny. But I was the lucky one that penetrated the ovum. And on the way home from that particular event, which, of course, I was flying high, I couldn't believe it. I was not in the Jaguar. I was in another car. I was in a Chrysler, which had the Hemi engine, but it was not whatever. It was a Chrysler New Yorker, an old man's car, but it had the Hemi engine. So I'm driving home from that encounter with the Playboy bunny. And remember, I'm really only a kid. And my mind was certainly not in the car. I mean, where was I? I have no idea. My mind was on cloud nine. Bang, hit from the side by a truck. The car is absolutely totaled. I got to get a tow truck. It's towed home to in front of the house. And I remember selling the car for the engine alone to some hitter kid who was going to take the engine out. We had a long talk about it and use it in a dragster. Denise in Seattle, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael?
Yes.
How are you? Oh, I'm not supposed to ask.
Oh, God. Come on, please, don't ask me how I am. What's your point?
Oh, well, don't get mad at me.
Oh, hey, please, that's number two. One more and you're out. Please, Denise, make your point.
I wanted to know how old your mom was when she came to you in your dream. when you
Oh, my God. She was younger. She was much younger.
To ask you, because my dad has come to me, and he's just glowing, and he's much younger.
Yeah, I mean, I could be very mundane about it now and knock the whole thing out and get away from the spiritual, and I don't want to do it because it was a beautiful moment, but I don't know if it's real. Because I think the reason I saw her in my dream is because I found a cube with pictures in it, like was like hidden away, a cube from when she was young, when my kids were young. And I looked at it the other day, and I marveled at how beautiful she was, God bless her soul. So maybe it's just looking at the picture comes back. Who knows? That's the this is the beautiful thing about being a human being. We don't know any of the answers to this. So you may as well imagine there's a heaven. You may as well imagine that you're punished if you're bad. And he knows when you've been happy. He knows. Ding-a-ling, here's the peppermint. He knows when you've been good or bad. So be good for goodness sake. Hey, Bing Crosby, snowman, mama in the thing, and daddy in the – everyone's normal. The people were in the closet. The other one, the bad guys were caught. The cops hit him with the clubs and put him away, and there were no bad people. I understand the postcard view of life. It's not the way it is unless you want to live in that world, and you can. Who's to stop you from living in that world? He knows when you've been good or bad, so be good for goodness sake. You know, all right, so you could live in that. Tell your children about Santa Claus if you want. Or if you don't want, then turn your child into a sick gothic who'll get black fingernails and hit someone with a piece of molding.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Tucson, Arizona. Todd, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I was hoping to brighten your day with a good story. I met a lady in the parking lot that was listening
to your
radio.
Hold it now. This is a family show, sir.
Oh, yeah. She was listening to your radio program, a little French immigrant lady. And
yeah.
I was listening to the fact she was listening to your program, and I looked at her and said, are you listening to Dr. Savage? And the look on her face was like I caught her stealing or something. She looked up as she turned the radio down, and she apologized to me, and I started laughing. I said, oh, no, ma'am. I said, I love Dr. Savage. He's great. And she got into some stories about her French culture and coming from France, and, I mean, the praises that she had for you and how accurate you were and the way you described. You know,
why did she turn the show off, do you think? Because, what, she was afraid you were a hater of the show?
More than likely. That's what I mean. She kind of had that embarrassed, like, you know, she got caught doing something she shouldn't have.
Well, she sounds like a nice lady, also very shy. And how did it end up? Okay, or someone pulled a gun out in the parking lot?
No. She was kind of woman you'd want to, you know, go have a drink with and chat.
Hold it now. As I said, it's a family show. We can't go there. Well, how old a woman was she, Todd?
Oh, she was probably in her, I'd say 70s.
But she was French, so therefore the rules still apply.
<Very good.
laughs> Hey, thanks for thinking of me. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. It's a light day. Play another Bobby Darin. You did it already, Beyond the Sea. What else do we have for him? Of him.
Every night I hope.
Who's this? That's not Bobby Darin. This is Bobby Darin? I don't like it. I'm not into it. Let me hear something that reminds me of a 57 Chevy, two four-barrel carburetors, fins. Give me, like, I don't know. Give me Danny and the Juniors at the Hop. There you go. That's it. Give me something, a real throwback song. I want throwback. I want muscle car music. I don't want to hear about senior sins. Makes you want to get out in a convertible, doesn't it, and race around? All right, turn it off. We're having too much good feelings here on the Savage Nation. I've got to get the angst going in order to keep the audience listening. I got to get them angry, I suppose. But I may not be doing much more of it. I am so beyond anger. I am so beyond rage at the political machine. I am so beyond wanting to change the Democrat or Republican parties that I could care less. I become apathetic at this point. I may change. Don't call me and tell me not to be apathetic. It's the greatest crime. All right, I understand that. I may continue to talk about filet of soul and my dog for a while and the red brick buildings and how I can feel the semen in the brick. I mean, S-E-A-M-E-N, the semen in the brick. It was an area where the semen were waylaid over the years. They'd go into their bars, get you know, knockout drops, next thing they'd be put on a ship somewhere. And I could feel this in this area, the Barbary Coast. You walk down these streets, it's filled with, like, art galleries, antique stores, a lot of lawyers for some reason. Thankfully, most of them went out of business in the last year, and the buildings are vacant. But they were formerly like little hotels for seamen and, you know, prostitutes, dance halls, that kind of thing here in San Francisco from the Gold Rush era. The buildings date to, like, you know, Civil War, post-Civil War period. I've always liked, even when I went to St. Louis, I'd go to the Gas Lamp District. If I went to Seattle 20 years ago, I'd always go to Old Town. I always liked Old Town. Old Town, Old Town. Whatever city I'm in, I go to the Old Town. Why is that? Like, when I went to Quebec when I was a youngster, I used to love Quebec because of the feeling of the old city, of old Quebec, the paving stones, the Chateau Frontenac. I used to love shooting down that, what do they call that, where you go in like a sled, a toboggan run they had at the hotel. Wow. You get a bottle of brandy, you drink half of it, and you get in the toboggan. Before you know it, you're sailing along and you're having fun. What do you want me to do? Politics, food, music, science, poetry, global warming, how to care for children, vitamins, the care and feeding of children, as I say. Anything you want me to talk about would be great. I think that the time for liberals and conservatives in this country to come together and defeat the Islamo-fascist before it's too late is really upon us. Unless the radical liberal comes to understand that his greatest enemy is not the conservative, but the Islamo-fascist who would stone him to death, cut his throat, this country is doomed because a house divided cannot stand.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Danny, on K Dawn in Las Vegas, go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm dying over here to hear anything you say positive. I'm a fan, but I think you're becoming a chronic pessimist.
Wait a minute. Is it illegal to be a pessimist?
We're not talking about law. We're talking about an entertainment show with information. I'm referring people to you, two that I've referred.
Oh, well, excuse me. What do you want me to do? Perform for you?
Mike?
Well, what do you want me to do? Get a string that you can pull from Las Vegas?
Mike, a little bit of positive. That's all.
All right, why don't you give me something positive? Go ahead, you give me something positive. And there's some nice optimistic music for you out there to keep all your Republicans happy. Can do. Put your mind to it. Put your shoulder to the grind. Put your shoulder to the wheel. Make up your mind. You can win. You're a winner. No negative. Be positive. Think positive. Only positive music and positive news. Everything's good. Everything's coming up roses. Bush is not a liberal. Bush is a conservative. John McCain is a good conservative. Be positive. Turn it off. You know, the thing I'll do is I'll rewrite the Bible. I'll call it the Newly Revised Optimist Bible, because if you read the Bible, it's really very negative. Take Jeremiah. You know, Jeremiah, it should be illegal to read Jeremiah in America because it's so negative. It's not positive. It's not optimistic. For example, it says, "For of old time I have broken the yoke and burst the bands, and you said I will not transgress, but upon every hill and under every leafy tree, you reclined playing the harlot." Now, that should not be allowed in the new Republican America. The New Republicrat America should revise the Bible, change Jeremiah, and it should say, upon every high hill and under every leafy tree, you did recline playing the clown. And then the next passage says, yet I had planted thee a noble vine, holy a right seed. How then art thou turned into the degenerate plant? No good. That gets people in Las Vegas unhappy. So we're going to revise that into a newly revised Optimist Bible. And the phrase in Jeremiah will now say, I had planted thee a noble vine, holy a right seed. How then art thou turned into the happy clown? See, this way everybody will be much happier. We have the can-do spirit here in America. We have to think Ronald Reagan. We have to think pioneers. We have to think cowboys and Indians. We have to think conquering Hitler. We must never allow a negative thought in our mind because it's very, very bad for the economy. We must be positive. Arbeit macht frei. Every morning, go to work and say to yourself, work makes you free. That's what we need is positive. Positive. Positive, I say. We're going to outlaw negativity in America. That's right. In the new America, negativity will be outlawed. And the Old Testament, particularly Jeremiah, will be burned because it is oh so negative. No Isaiah, no Jeremiah, no Judges, no Ecclesiastes, no Numbers, no Leviticus, no Exodus. Too negative, I say. Out with thee, out with thee. Okay, I'll be positive. People have requested that I be positive. I guess I could try to be positive. I don't know how to be positive. Okay, let's start with this. This morning when I was making tea, I said to myself, your one mistake in 2007 was that you forgot to be thankful to God for all the gifts that you have been given. That's hard for me because I fundamentally am not that kind of guy who gets up and I say every morning, thank God for what I have. I should. I admit that. So I said, if you could wake up every day and say, you know what, look at what you have. See, I personally don't want anything. Let me start with me. I don't want any more success. I don't need another bestseller. I'm not boasting now. Please don't take it the wrong way. I don't want anything right now for myself. That's not what's making me unhappy. I'm not like resentful. I'm not like unhappy that I don't have this or I don't have that. I don't want anything. All I am asking, first of all, I wanted to say thank you for giving me what I get, because I told you how this happened. I don't want to go, it sounds hokey. Things had gone really, really, really wrong for me 15 years ago, no matter what I did. Everything went wrong in my life. I mean, in terms of career-wise. I was like a wildcat, or I had turned it into a family joke. I said to myself, you know what? I'm like a wildcat who keeps drilling for wells and keeps coming up with dry holes. I said, but don't accuse me of ever having stopped throwing down those, you know, drilling. I drilled 1,000 wells and they wouldn't come up because the cards were stacked against me because I wasn't the right race. You get it? So anyway, but the long story is I made a prayer. I said to God, please, God, I've worked so hard. I can't take it anymore. I don't even want to tell you. I was 50 years old. And I had almost tapped out. I was ready to tap out and check out. I couldn't take it anymore. Because no matter which way I turned, they said white males need not apply. I got to tell you, on the MS, that's what I'm telling you. That's the way it was. Everything was like that. So then I made the tapes, and I said, God, please, just give me a living. That's all I ask you for. I don't want to win the lottery. I said, oh, please give me a living. I've tried so hard. I've done so many good things. Why are you doing this to me? And then when I stopped saying, why are you doing this to me, and said, only please give me a living, radio came along. Now, here's the interesting thing. It didn't come to me like in a lottery winning. You ask anybody who knows me going back to the first radio show. I have had to crawl on broken glass. I had to walk through fire. I had to jump hurdles in order to get where I am. Everyone knows that. And in order to keep this thing alive called the Savage Nation, it's an enormous, enormous challenge to do this correctly or as best as you can every day. 3 hours a day, like clockwork, get up every day and train for it, run for it, eat for it, sleep for it, plan for it. Because if you miss that curtain call or you get into the wrong state of mind by the time that 06 hits, you're out of business, kiddo. This business is a business that you can die with one wrong sentence, as you well know. With all of the left-wing fascists out there trying to trip you up, because we no longer live in the land of the free and the home of the brave. We live in a different country today. We live in a totally different Soviet-style America. But I'm up for the task. I'll bury them before they bury me. I will put them in an orange jumpsuit before they put me in one. I will get them out of business before they get me out of business. I can guarantee you. I can guarantee you people have left the political arena who you thought would be around forever, and I told you they wouldn't be around. People have left this campaign who I knew didn't stand a chance in you-know-where to get anywhere, and I knew they were doing it just for the publicity. They're gone. They're gone not with the wind. They're gone like dust in the wind. What I'm saying to you is there's a lot to be thankful for. But when God answers your prayers, whatever they may be, it often comes with a burden. It's not the lottery. You don't get X, you know, millions of dollars a year for nothing. You got to work it. You got to give back. So that's the whole message that I got to remember is give back. So I want to go through one more thing. I don't know where this soul searching has come from. I had reached a point in my radio career where, let's say, I was contemplating leaving radio at the end, let's say at the end of the year, when this year is over, 08. I have been seriously thinking about it for a long time now because there's only so many years anybody wants to do anything. And I feel I've done what I wanted to do. I've written four books now, four in a row, New York Times bestsellers. That's a heck of an achievement. I got to tell you, I don't care who you are. I don't care what you try to do. You try to do even one bestseller. I did four in a row. That's like four Babe Ruth kind of things for a guy like me. So what more do I need? What more do I want? I say to myself, the family is okay. The kids are okay. They don't need me. I'm not working for anybody. Everybody's doing well enough to get through life. Whatever years I may have left, I said to myself, what do I want to do with the years that remain? So I was contemplating this for the last 9 months now. What do I really want to do? So I contemplate what people normally do when they retire. Unfortunately, I'm an inner city kid. I always have been in my heart. I don't golf. I don't play tennis. I don't knock people who do. The sports never appealed to me, that kind of thing. I found that they were too distant. They were too slow for me. I'm not saying you're slow or a retard if you play golf. I didn't say that. I understand the great skill it takes. It's just not for me. Okay, let's leave it at that. So what kind of sports do I like? What am I going to do, go boating 7 days a week? Like a yucca puck with a captain's hat? I'm going to ride around tooting my horn with a dog? What kind of life is that? I'm going to travel? I've done more traveling than any human being should ever want to do. I did it when I was young. I've been a lot of places. I've done a lot of things, but I didn't just travel for travel's sake. I travel to collect medicinal plants. The collections unto themselves are worthy of a life's work. They were put into herbaria all over the world. Unto itself, I never talk about that. Is it as good as Jonas Salk inventing the polio vaccine? No, but it's a significant little step in science that I made. What I'm saying is I could do that. I could go back to collecting plants as a hobby, but I said I don't really want to do that anymore. I did it. I don't want that isolation and loneliness on the islands anymore, sitting alone on islands with people I don't really understand and in villages every night. You ask anyone who's actually really done it, there's no romanticism involved. It's very, very difficult, and it's very soul-wrenching to sit in a strange village on a straw mat at night, night after night. It's not a lot of fun. When you're young, maybe you can imagine it's kind of a romantic thing to do, but when you are at a different point in your life, there's no romance in it. So the point I'm making, in a long story short, is that there was nothing that I really wanted to do outside of what I have been doing for these last 15 years. And that is look at the political machine as it goes by, watch America as it goes by, and try to make a difference. Now, am I imagining that I've made a difference? No, I'll tell you, we've had some real victories. For that little film critic with the insignificant show with no ratings who thinks that the conservative movement is dead, let me remind the little film critic that this show stopped the Dubai port deal. Does that mean the conservative movement is dead, Mr. Film Critic? This little show stopped the illegal immigration amnesty bill. We stopped it dead in its tracks. Not just this show, but this was the pounding drum of the anti-illegal immigration amnesty movement. Did you hear what I just said to you? We've had two or three really big victories on this radio show. And what I'm saying to you is, there are other things we might be able to do, both negative and positive, to save this country, to put it back on its course, to pray to God that somebody comes along who is worthy of the title president. it's possible this little show could have some influence on that. You say, well, are you being a megalomaniac? What influence can you have? Nobody ever refers to you. You don't exist, Michael. Well, go on to michaelsavage.com and take a look at the 49 million people who have voted on my website, and I can guarantee you that the listeners to this show will determine the outcome of the next election. I can guarantee it. And I didn't pick anybody yet, and I don't intend to, but I can guarantee you that the listeners will pick the next president of the United States of America. And I'm not even sure that that person is yet on the ballot. I'm not sure that that person has yet come forward. It's possible there's a person who has not yet come forward who will appear and who will tell America exactly what they want to hear, because that's what the American people are screaming, clamoring, praying, and dreaming for. And the people will rally around them like metal filings around a magnet. That's what's going to happen. Maybe. And so, therefore, there are things we can do. And that's why I'm still in radio, because I feel that I can still make a difference. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is where I find myself today. Does that answer some questions? I really didn't plan on this, you know, soul-searching exposure today, but that's it. But this is good for the earth. The earth needs this. The earth loves this. The ground is speaking to me. Every plant and every bird is saying, thank you, God, for again opening up the heavens.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Politicians are so full of crap. Here in San Francisco, for example, they banned plastic bags in supermarkets. They said it's bad for the environment because the plastic bags don't deteriorate or disintegrate. They sit in the landfill for thousands of years. They're very concerned about the environment in San Francisco, as I say. So now you have to have a paper bag when you leave a grocery store. And if you're walking out in the rain, it doesn't matter to the city of transsexuals who run the city. The paper bag, of course, disintegrates in the rain and your groceries get wet. The plastic was much better and much more convenient. But let's take it on the face of it. So plastic is not biodegradable, right? Then how come they distribute condoms in San Francisco like M&Ms? Isn't that made of a plastic? You're telling me that the condoms that are so popular with the city transsexuals don't sit in landfills for 20,000 years? You see the hypocrisy and stupidity? Or they tell us that the salmon population is dying out, that the salmon here, we're supposed to worry about, that the salmon are not breeding. We don't read that the people are not breeding, only that the salmon are not breeding. So now they're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars. Record low number of salmon reaching Central Valley could mean severe fishing restrictions. And then they try to analyze why the spawning, the number of salmon that are spawning, has decreased. Nobody will say that perhaps the toxic garbage that is dumped offshore in San Francisco is poisoning the oceans. Nobody will say that the hospital waste and the other untreated sewage that goes out into the ocean is so toxic that it's killing the fisheries off the coast of California. Oh, no. Instead, they'll tell you to cut out plastic bags in the supermarket. I'm going to prove something to you right now. This is a daring act I'm about to perform, which is I'm going to read the label on a box of bullets, 380 auto 90 grain bullets, and I'm going to show you that I could even make that interesting, even the people who don't have guns. I'm going to read you something, right? Lead warning: discharging firearms in poorly ventilated areas, cleaning firearms, or handling ammunition may result in exposure to lead and other substances known to cause birth defects and reproductive harm. Well, you know, a bullet can also cure a birth defect, to be honest with you, when you think about it. Why it's in English and French, I don't understand. Why would they make a bullet box in French and English? That's the part I can't understand. The French haven't used guns in 100 years. How many Frenchmen would buy centerfire cartridges? I don't. There's a warning here for children on the box. French, they're not allowed to have guns in France, are they? So why would they even make this in French? I don't understand this. It's like a cheap centerfire cartridge, maybe. That it could be in Louisiana or something if they speak French, don't they, down in there in the bayou? I mean, no slur intended. 380 is a terrible round, by the way, for home defense. I don't think it'll work. Everyone says, oh, it's not going to work. God, I wouldn't want to be hit by one. Guys always say, oh, don't get a 380, get a 40. Man, I don't want that thing going through me. What's wrong with the 380? Like a 32 is not good enough. Oh, okay, fine. I'll just shoot it through my splinter. It's not big enough. I'm into the 45. I mean, you want your stopping power. I mean, in the case of a home defense weapon, let me tell you something, size matters when it comes to the cartridge. You know, I mean, let's not fool around here. You got a guy coming in on PCP, you want something that'll knock him down, and it's got to be a 45. I don't care how big he is. I don't care what drug he's on. That's what it was designed for by the U.S. government when they were in the Spanish campaign, the Philippines campaign, the Spanish-American War, wasn't it? And they were having – you know, this is an interesting thing historically because I've studied this occasionally and only on a mild note, on a minor note. But apparently, weren't they fighting Muslim separatists in the Philippines during the Spanish-American War as well, if I remember correctly? And weren't these fanatics using some kind of drugs in the jungles there? And they'd come screaming at the U.S. Marines, and no matter what they shot them with, the 38s, they'd keep coming with their machetes or bolo knives. So they went back and they said to the ballistics laboratory, develop a slug that'll stop them no matter what they're on. They came up with the 45. That was the development of the origin and development of the 45. You understand that? A straighter gun there is. I mean, that gun shoots straight. Real men. You remember that one? Real men. What was the one I said, Beowulf? Real men don't what? Early effort. Yeah, real. We can talk about guns, beer, wine, guns, cameras, ammunition. I'd rather avoid politics for a few moments. And remember, not truffles. The only topic I don't want to talk about is truffles. Conservatives do not eat truffles. Real men do not eat truffles. Houston, Texas, Russell, quickly, fire away. You own a Duffy boat. Tell me about it. Do you like it?
The great thing about it is when you're just putting around the harbor or in and out of a network of canals, there's no fumes. You know,
that's what I want, no fumes. I hate fumes.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. I feel like I'm under siege in a bunker listening to this every day. I'm in a sweat. My dog is nervous. The dog is sick of throwing up from the tension. I know dogs pick it up from owners. He doesn't eat. He's moping around. His hair is matted. I'm trying to do the best I can for him. I don't know what it is. I think it's the politics of the day. Gas is through the ceiling. Maybe the dog's nervous when he sees me go to the gas station, and it looks like I just lost at Las Vegas. I fill the tank. Okay, thank you. It's $109. You know, I feel as though I'm in a bad movie from France from the 1950s where I'm paying in old francs by the liter. That's what it looks like. The thing spins around like a roulette, around and around. It's, and then where's this going to end? A government's supposed to rein in an industry that has a monopoly, isn't it? Never mind what the golfer says to you. This guy's a straight-up mouthpiece for the oil industry and for the Bush administration and Republicans in general. Free market. How can you have a free market, Rush, when there's a, when there's a monopoly? What are you talking about? If you don't like what the Seven Sisters do? You go drill your own well? What are you, crazy? You people buy into that rubbish? It's no free market. It's a monopoly. A government's supposed to stop monopolies. The oil companies are a monopoly. OPEC is a monopoly. Make no mistake about it. And we do have options. We could go on to a crash program right now. Again, they're not asking them, the, you know, one of the smartest men in the world, what the solution is. Oil for illegals. Make Mexico pump the oil, and we could take it from Mexico one barrel per illegal per day. That's 20 to 30 million barrels of oil to pay for the huge social costs of the illegal aliens. It's irrespective of whether you are for or against illegal immigration. I don't know how anybody can be for it unless they're benefiting from the cheap labor. Okay? No sovereign nation on earth has ever permitted this kind of influx, this kind of invasion. No country on earth has ever permitted it that is still standing. The only time this kind of invasion has occurred is after a war, when the country loses. They let 30 million people from another country come in and reproduce and become citizens. That's after they lost the war. But with politicians like we have, we don't have to lose a war. You want oil? Mexico's swimming in oil. You don't have to pump it in around the Straits of Hormuz. You don't need an aircraft carrier, battle fleet to protect it. You could truck it over the border, okay, instead of trucking in the other stuff. Instead of, you know, I mean, I have to speak in code here, like the white and the black. Instead of trucking in the white, truck in the black. Okay, you know where that's coming from? Put that on your superhighway right to Texaco's gas station. Get the oil to the refineries. Get thee to a refinery, if you don't mind. Number two in the crash program, drill in Anwar. Anyone doesn't want you drilling in Anwar, arrest them. It's a national emergency. Period, end of story. The Caribou will thank you. I remember when the Alaskan pipeline was being built in the early 70s, this same hysterical nonsense about it'll kill the caribou. Their migration patterns require that they migrate across these vast, pristine regions of Alaska. And if you build the pipeline above ground to pump that hot, disgusting oil out of the earth of Alaska, you will disrupt the migratory patterns of the caribou. Well, actually, if you have studied this recently, you find out that the caribou, meaning the moose, they love the pipeline because it's warm, and they never really wanted to live up there, man, because of global cooling, they had to grow a lot of fur and adapt to the cold. They probably originally were deer. Then global cooling hit, and those who could live had longer fur. And then they mated. The ones with the long fur mated with the other guys with long fur. The girls, that baby with long fur, the woman with the short fur died, survival of the fittest. Now we are a millennia later, and we have moose. And the moose don't really like the cold. They actually would rather live in Florida. But they had no choice about it. The world changed underneath their tusks. So, I mean, underneath their antlers. So what you have now is caribou who really would rather be around warm. So they actually congregate around the Alaskan oil pipeline that we were told would kill them and disrupt their migratory patterns. In fact, they like to reproduce under the heat, man. Ask yourself a question. Where would you rather do it, in the snow or under a hot pipeline? So the same with the caribou. They're not stupid. If a guy wants to get down with his old lady moose, he's going to do it around something in a warm place. So where's he going to go to do that? The pipeline. So we've actually created a larger population of caribou as a result of this oil pipeline running through Alaska. I'm telling you, I have a great memory for the big things. You understand what I just said to you? Do you have that or not? Do you get that picture? So what I'm saying to you is that's why drilling in Anwar now makes sense. Because with slant drilling, it would affect very little of the so-called pristine environment. And by the way, most of the people who are in favor of the environment never go to the environment. I actually do. And I'm actually a real conservationist, and I've really done things for the conservation movement over the last 30 or 40 years. They've done nothing but collect big checks and go to dinners. But I don't want to, you know, put another halo around my halo here. What I want to tell you, what I want to tell you is that I'm giving you a program, oil for Mexico. You want to lower gas prices? You want to go on to a crash program like immediately, like the Marshall Plan, because this is war? This is a war against our economy by OPEC and the oil giants. And because Bush is an oil president, we're seeing the most egregious profiteering in the history of the world going on, not only from the oil cartel, but also on Wall Street, because there's no controls whatsoever. He put a shadow of a policeman in the SEC called Chris Cox, another great Republican from Orange County. Christopher Cox, Harvard, the white knight. He waited all his life to get that appointment, left Congress and went to the SEC. And under his watch, there's the greatest crime of the last 150 years has occurred, the greatest crimes. The bust out of Bear Stearns, et cetera, et cetera. Huge fortunes were made and lost. People lost their houses, subprime meltdown. And Chris Cox is sitting there doing nothing. Republican from Orange County. Great, great, great appointment, Mr. Bush. In a sane world, the guy would be not only thrown out of his job, he'd be investigated. By the way, in my opinion, it's only one man's opinion. I never met Mr. Cox, but I know he's above the law. Absolutely. I mean, he's clean as a whistle, a Boy Scout. So that's number two. Number one, we drill an animal. Number one, oil from Mexico, oil for illegals. We get it for free to pay for the hospitalization, medication, and schooling. They don't want to give it to us. We send in the 82nd Airborne and we take it, like in the good old days. We become a country again instead of a patsy that they suck everything out of us and we get nothing back. Take it from them instead. That's number one, oil from Mexico for the social cost of the illegal alien invasion. Two, number two, drill in Anwar. It'll take 6 to 7 years, I think, to see a drop of oil. I don't know how long it'll take. They have to drill much deeper because they have to go on the angle. Drill in Anwar. Number three, immediately start pumping oil out of Iraq. That's yesterday. The oil is there, Jackson. You start pumping it. You put it on ships. You protect it with the American fleet that's doing zilch, nothing but training right now. And I'm sick of training, burning up gas with training. Okay? Get the oil out of Iraq. Get it over here. Get it into the refineries. Immediately get it in line. That's number three. And I can guarantee you in a very short period of time, oil will come down from the $4, $5 a gallon back to $2.50. Now, why do you not hear this on ABC, CBS, NBC? Fair and balanced, it's Fox News. Why don't you hear it on any of those stations? Because they're all tied into the same beltway garb. They're shrouded with the same garb as all of them are. They pretend they're different than each other. Now, you ask yourself a question. I'm going to have you ask yourself a question. I'm going to give you a savage question. NBC News has a ratings for the week of 8 million listeners. ABC News has a ratings for the week of 7.7 million. And Katie Coran Couric, who we told you would fail, even though the morons paid her $15 million, I knew she was a flop before she began, had a listenership of 5 million for the week. For the week? How is it that I, an unknown man who's never invited on a radio show, television show, never written about in a newspaper, has a listenership of at least 8 to 10 million a week, according to Talkers Magazine? That's at least. I know it's higher than that. At least that number. Why are people listening to my show? Precisely because of what you just heard. Because I have ideas, valid ideas, that you will never hear on ABC, CBS, NBC, or Fox News. I didn't say they're bad at what they do. They're bad at disseminating their view of world events, but they're not good at giving you any solutions or ideas. I am different in that regard. And these ideas are so threatening to the establishment of which they are a part that they will not project these ideas. Now, how do you think a guy like the Leprechaun, who has gotten away with going from being an Entertainment Tonight guy to so-called wrapping himself in the flag and being a patriot, a wonderful patriot, how is it that Hillary Clinton will go on his show? Ask yourself why. Because he cultivated her. And the guy's all over the map politically. That he's entitled to be a chameleon. There is nothing wrong with being a leprechaun, and I've said that before. In a world of 5 billion people, a certain number of people are going to be charlatans and leprechauns. That doesn't mean they're bad people. It's just the way they are. I'll be back.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I had such a bad experience on takeout last night. I have to tell you about it.
I like restaurants. Don't get me wrong. I will go back to them. But right now, I'm not going to many. So, actually, tonight, I'm going to go to one. So I did takeout list. It was a very hot night. And you don't want to eat on it. So I wait till it's dark to eat. Now it's too late to do it. So it's takeout. I call it in and I say to her, okay, I want the frutti di mare, the pasta. I've done this many times at this place. I want no clams. I want extra calamari. So the idiot, the high school student taking the order, says, all right, no clams, extra calamari. I said, then I want a lot of bread. Then I want broccoli, no butter. I want Brussels sprouts, no butter. Boom, and I have someone go pick it up for me. An hour later, the food arrives. All clams, no calamari, and no bread. One slice of stale bread. So I was so upset. It was late. It was almost 10 o'clock. I started eating. But it starts to gall me. So I call up in the middle of eating with the dog looking at me. I can't give him any of this food, so I give him a piece of cheese, which he loves. We're sitting there in the dark by the water. And it was enjoyable. I mean, don't get me wrong. But if I say no clams, because I have to throw them out because I don't like clams. And I only like the other stuff, a shrimp and a calamari. So they give me the opposite. I call up and I try to explain it to her. It's a chain called Pasta Pomodoro. I mean, I'm not ashamed to tell you because it's too many times already the same thing. Too many times the same thing. And they have high school students taking the order. So I said to the manager what went on. She said, oh, I can't imagine she would do that. I said, yeah, but she also told the person who picked it up for me that there was no bread left. She said, I can't imagine that. We got loads of bread. So I said, well, what is she, crazy, stupid, a sadist? How could you run a restaurant like this? I said, you know, I'm getting so mad at you by you giving me these answers that I'm thinking of doing like the dry cleaner lawsuit where that – remember that lawyer sued the dry cleaner for like $8 million for a pair of pants? I almost understand what happened. He snapped probably. I said, if you keep this up, I said, I'm going to sue you for false advertising. If how many times have I said to you, no clams, extra calamari, and make sure you put bread in the thing and you send no bread? Maybe the fifth time in a row now? And I hung up on him. So this is what goes on. You know what it is? It's not her or the restaurant. You know what I found out lately? Nobody listens to anybody about anything. Have you noticed that in America today? It's in the service area, the service industries. Nobody listens to anybody. They don't want to hear you. They hate you. And it's not like my fault that I'm calling in an order. It doesn't make me a rich guy and that person poor. All I'm doing is ordering a schmucky takeout dinner alone in a house in an undershirt with a dog because that's where I want to be. Why can't they get it right? They always have to, like, give you something wrong. Is it the Bay Area? I want to know. Is this going on across America where no matter what you say to anybody in a service industry, they do it wrong on purpose? Nobody wants to do anything right. I've never seen anything like this. There's an anger. There's a subtext of anger by everybody. Is it any wonder that I take such pleasure in a simple creature like a dog? No. It's no wonder. Houston, Texas, Chris, you're on the Savage Nation.
I'm a proud father of a five-year-old, and I'm looking to get him a companion, a dog. And I want
you
to tell me the story of how you met Teddy.
You have to get him. I'll tell you, you could never do better than a small poodle. A miniature poodle, a 10-pounder. The little ones are too little for a child, I think. Like the 2-pounders, the child could accidentally hurt. But a 10- or 11-pound dog at full weight for a child, there's nothing better. This is like, I look at this dog sometimes, I think it's a living teddy bear. No matter what mood I'm in, Chris, as a grown man, he's the teddy bear I wanted to have when I was a child that my father wouldn't let me have because only sissies had teddy bears. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir, I do.
He wouldn't let me have a teddy bear. Ah, you don't need a teddy bear. You're a girl. Girls have dolls. You don't need a teddy bear. But Teddy is a living teddy bear. Sometimes he rolls on his back, looks at me in the eyes with his eyes, and I can't explain it. Dogs have ways about it. That's how they get away with not working for a living. All they do is look cute. But he's a great dog. That breed is smart. He's very good with children. He likes children. I've never heard a bad thing with him. Maybe he's a special one. I don't know. This dog was picked off the internet from a breeder in Tennessee, believe it or not, and shipped out by plane. Would you believe it?
No, sir, I wouldn't, really. Off the internet.
No, you wouldn't believe it. On the internet. I wouldn't know whether to recommend it or not. I really do think you need to look at the animal you're going to buy because you don't know. But let's just talk breeds, Chris. How old is your child?
5 years old, sir.
Oh, he's perfect for a dog. This is just the age. The child will learn that the dog is hungry like you, so you have to feed him every day. The dog gets dirty like a person does, so you have to bathe him and you have to brush him. And the dog sometimes doesn't feel good, you have to hold him. You know, because that's how a child learns. How do they learn otherwise? Otherwise, there's no way for them to learn. So I would recommend Teddy. I mean, you can't have my dog.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
What's the worst year of my life so far? Never thought about it that way. What's the best year of my life so far? Give me a little Mel Allen. It's a high fly ball. I want to go back to my childhood. That's it. I want to live in the past. Oh, thank you, Mel. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Walking around with a transistor radio, crew cut haircut, a little kid with corduroy pants, innocent, no sexual feelings, nothing. All that was on my head was baseball, but now it's a different story. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? There's so many problems. Who asked for this? I should disappear into the ethers. White Hat, West Palm Beach, Jupiter. Maybe I should go to Jupiter instead of Jupiter, Florida. You know that most of America walks around like they don't even know what's going on. They don't know where Iran is. If you said Iran, Ahmadinejad, Hitler, they wouldn't know if you were talking about a baseball team or if you were talking about science fiction. They go to malls. All they want to do is jingle bells. Can you blame them? It's the way most people are, actually, when you think about it. So why can't I be like most people? Answer, because I never was. I've always had the weight of the world on my shoulders. Even when I was a little kid in the Bronx, they said, that one has the weight of his shoulders, the weight of the world on his shoulders. That one has the weight of the world on his shoulders. That one. They always said that one. Can you play See the USA in a Chevrolet with Donna? What's her name? Donna Reed. I want to hear See the USA. That's all.
USA in your That's Chevrolet. It. America is asking you to call.
That's when there still was a Chevrolet.
Through the USA. America's the greatest land of all.
And they made the, turn it off already. That's another time. You know, it's like Gillette, Friday Night Fights. Everything was different. It was a different world. So 2007 hasn't been too great for me. I wouldn't say horrible, okay? Horrible is death. Horrible is a family member dying. Horrible is a dog getting run over by your own car in the driveway. Horrible is the doctor tells you you have bowel cancer and 6 months to live. Horrible is an emergency room. So I'm not complaining, don't get me wrong. But I am in my own way. I am in my own way. Do you see the latest story out here? Bush comes up with a mortgage plan that will freeze certain subprime interest rates for 5 years. Now, on the face of it, you say, wow, how compassionate. A three-pronged solution to stem the flow of mortgage foreclosures. Now, let me ask you something. How many of these who are about to go into foreclosure are illegal aliens? Has anyone asked that question but me? Answer, no. The government, as you well know, was forcing banks to lend to people who were not only illegal aliens, but unqualified for a mortgage. And if they didn't lend, the banks didn't lend the money to people who didn't qualify, they were going to be sued by various divisions of the U.S. government. Now they're about to go belly up, and who's going to bail them out? The very same government that said, you must lend money to them. Now who's going to pay for the bailout? You and I. You and I. Now what about stronger lending standards? Like when I was young and I wanted to get a mortgage, I couldn't afford one. They wouldn't give me one. Why? Because I couldn't qualify. Why couldn't I qualify? I didn't have sufficient income. Therefore, I couldn't buy a house. But you see, everything's changed in the new PC America. And so you have a socialist light government that said to banks for years, you lend money to illegal aliens or we will sue you. In fact, you can't even ask the so-called citizenship status of a potential borrower or we'll sue you for racism. So the banks were over a barrel. They said, but. The government said, we'll give it to you in the you-know-what unless you lend it to the illegal alien and unless you lend it to people who don't qualify. So now we have a so-called subprime crisis, and no one's talking about it. So Michael Savage again asks the question,
that's the unasked. It's a question no one is going to ask. How many of these people in a subprime mortgage crisis are illegal aliens? How many of these people are those that banks were forced to lend to? But it doesn't stop Bush in clip 31 from telling us we have to pay for it. Listen.
Some lenders made loans that borrowers did not understand, especially in the subprime sector.
Well, hold on. Some lenders made loans that borrowers didn't understand? Is the president fooling you? What's there not to understand? Now he's taking the side of the people who they were forced to lend money to. Could you do me a favor and explain to the audience through music why I said 2000 is a very bad year? And so in order to do that, you have to play three things for me in this order. You have to play Mel Allen, you have to play Johnny Philip Morris, and then you have to come back to me with a doo-wop song. Go ahead, see if you can do that.
Drive hits the deep right field. That ball is going, it is gone.
Come in, Berlin. Secret message. Come in, Berlin. Berlin, come in. Berlin, calling Berlin. This is a secret coded message to the right wing in America. It's dip, 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 dip. If you read the first letter of each word and reverse them with lemon juice, you'll see what I'm actually saying. Come in, Berlin. Berlin, come in. Crazy leftists. They actually believe I'm tearing this off. I don't go for this. I don't go for it. Now, the first mortgage that this family ever got was my father in 1954 or 5. He bought a house for $14,500 in Queens, New York. And the mortgage, you had to put down, I think, 20 or 25% at the least in those days, right? So what did he have to put down, like $3,000? It was a lot of money in those days. And then he took out a mortgage, and then he paid off the house. He had to qualify for the mortgage, and if he couldn't qualify, they wouldn't have given it to him. And he paid off the house, and that was the end of it. In those days, my father wouldn't buy a car on time because he said that was cheating. Can you imagine the thoughts of those guys in those days? A mortgage you had to pay off because who had cash to pay a whole house off? Nobody. Unless you worked for some people on a certain street that you ate spaghetti on. But the fact is, nobody really that we knew had those kind of cash in the wallpaper in Belrose, Queens. So we didn't, and you had to take a mortgage. But the fact of the matter is, a car was another story. You bought a used car and you paid cash. Why? Because if you bought it on time, you were cheating. And you couldn't really afford it, and you were a faker. That means 99.9% of the people on the road today wouldn't have a car. I mean, you got to be crazy not to pay a car off, you know?
Savage.
A couple of years back, I had an air conditioning system put into my house by a legitimate air conditioning firm. But I didn't know who he was using for labor. Well, today I had an American air conditioning man go in, a guy I know, to look at adding something for me. He said, do you know that your panel is burned out from what this guy put in? You could have burnt your house down. That's what we're talking about here, Mark. I had no idea he used the substandard electrician. I thought he used the union electrician. I had no way of checking.
But that's what they're using. They're using nothing but illegals.
Right. He got some guy who learned it in a trade school in Guadalajara, if that, or picked it up along the way. He didn't tell me that. He used somebody, some illegal alien, probably relative, and passed on the money he saved into his own pocket. I didn't ask him to use a cheap electrician when he put the air conditioning in. So this is what we're talking about. Thanks. See, I'm a lucky guy because I come from a blue-collar background. Otherwise, I don't know what I'd be. It's very good to have your feet on the ground and know what reality is. And I don't know how a person who grew up in living off the fat of the land where everything is handed to them can know really what's going on down on the street level. I guess that's what I'm very lucky in a way that my father was so mean to me. To me, mean. I didn't want to do what he made me do. To me, it seemed mean. But he was right in a way. We fought like crazy. But I'll never forget to this day the day he dragged me out of that house and said, that's it. I'm never the fight. It's going to be in my book, by the way, my autobiography. The reason I'm living through all of this again is because I'm reviewing all the stories over the years that I've told, and I had them printed up, and I'm editing them. And I found the one where I was a kid sitting at home every night. I was talking about watching Walter Cronkite on the news at night.
And I'm eating a steak, I'm eating French fries, and I'm eating cherry vanilla ice cream every night like a fat little porker. And my father comes in 6 o'clock gray from the day's struggle over the Queensboro, over the bridge in the tunnel. And God knows if business was no good, he's white from the day and from the commute. And here's his fat number one son sitting there with being, you know, fed like King Farouk, the steak, the fries, the cherry vanilla ice cream. In other words, a heart attack diet. And he turns gray as a ghost seeing that I'm – so he says to my mother one day, I must have been 12, that's it. You're ruining the kid. This is over. He's coming into the market with me every Saturday from now on. No, I don't care what you want. You're coming in. So I went from this spoiled little world down into a Dickensian basement in his store where I had to work like a Bowery bum cleaning the bronze statues with the cyanide solution. I've told the story before. I don't want to tell it again. It'll be in my autobiography. But the point I'm making is I resented it. But in a way, I mean, I learned an awful lot about hard labor, horrible labor, disgusting work, and I was able to do it. And to this day, I got to tell you something. Once you're trained to work, once you're committed to being a worker, you can't stop. There's no retirement. Because once you – what do I mean retirement? I don't even know what the word means. I'm an inner-city kid. I'm not proud of it. I'm not unproud of it. I never really learned to play tennis. I never learned to play golf. I know friends who grew up in the same milieu I did who early on took up tennis and golf. And I, you know, that's what they want, fine. I never found it interesting. I found the games too slow. I would. It's like watching paint dry to me to play tennis or golf. And I know it requires skill. Don't get me wrong. I'm not just blowing it off. It takes tremendous skill. But boring? I can't believe it. I'd rather roll on the rug and play with my dog and stick my fingers in his mouth and pull on his canine teeth than play golf. But if you like it, God bless you. And it's a tough game to do right. The point is a little different. When I went to college, skiing just became big in America. I remember, and some of the guys I grew up with took up skiing in Mount Snow in Vermont. I got the ski pants, but I never took up skiing. I liked the outfit. I thought that they would attract girls, so I got ski pants. And they worked. I got to tell you the truth. In those days, it was before I could afford to eat a lot, so consequently, the ski pants had their benefits. But I never took up skiing. I learned how to use a sled, and it was fun to go down hills in the Bronx on a sled. I almost got killed under a truck. To this day, I can remember the truck. Remember the days? Could you imagine? I grew up in a time when trucks had chain drives on them. Monster trucks that had chain drives going around the wheels. So a kid's uncle, but with three of us on a sled, the uncle must have been 20. To me, he was an old man. All three of us bellied up on a sled, American Flyer, I think, whatever. Who knows what it was. And was shooting down a hill, and he lost control of the sled. I swear to God, it went under the truck as it was moving. I thought we were going to be crushed and shot out on the other side of the truck. It shows you what kids go through. They can die by accident for no reason whatsoever. But I've worked. I've worked minimum wage jobs. I worked in an ice cream factory. Horrible, disgusting summer job. Putting ice cream bars inside a I'm on a line in a factory. You ever work in a factory? Well, don't talk about the minimum wage unless you have. You try putting 24 bars of frozen ice cream inside a box as it comes by you in about X number of seconds. And if you miss that box, the foreman, who was a little Italian guy up on a platform, was like out of slavery times. He screamed at everybody all day long. It reminded him of me today. He stood up there on the top, and he's watching the line go around. There must have been 200 people. Most of them were, frankly, were young Puerto Rican women and men, if I remember the factory correctly. And I had a summer job. I was glad to get it. My friend's father owned the ice cream factory. Didn't do me any good. They put me on the production line. So you had to fill the box. The boxes are coming around. I don't know how many seconds. You had to stuff them in 5 seconds, let's say. If you missed your 24 bars in that box, he stopped the line, he hit a button, the overseer, and he yelled out, "You moron idiot, you. Look what you made me do, you stupid moron." Oh, those were the days. I had a teacher, for example. I can't mention his name. He had two fingers on the right hand. How do you have two fingers? It was alleged he was in the IRA and he blew a hand off putting in a bomb somewhere. Now, he happened to be a wonderful math teacher. I don't know whether it was a bomb or whatever. Or he was born that way. But this guy, Mr. W, was a tough guy of the old school type. And when the tests would come back, you sat there in fear. You shook. You sweat because you knew what was coming. He would read out your name and your grade. And believe me, if you were a dummy and you got a low grade, he'd make you come up to the blackboard for everyone to look at you like you were the big dummy you were, and you dreaded it. That's what made you study. You didn't want to be humiliated in front of the kids. Now, today, the opposite is true. Today, they take the moron and put the moron in front of the class and tell you that the moron is smarter than you are. And the smart kid has to hide his smartness because you're living in a communistic America. This is a communist system we haven't developed in this stupid country of ours. Don't play tag. You're liable to make children feel inferior. Don't do this. Don't do that. And that's why we're a nation of losers. I'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now, let me go back to Maui. First of all, I want to go back to my little grass shack in Kealakekua, Hawaii. Oh, and I have a good note. On Maui, you know the mountain, the famous extinct volcano? Haleakala has not been renamed Haleakala Akbar yet. Haleakala has not yet been renamed Haleakala Akbar. Thank you. It is still Haleakala. Turn it off now. They got the point already. We had a chef schedule for the whole time because they know I hate to go to restaurants. So for me, because I'm such a troubled human being and they know I don't behave well in restaurants, they got a private chef. Okay. Private chef first day, breakfast was good. No problems. No complaints. Actually, excellent. She did a good job. Lunch, a big bear of a man walks in. Excellent cook. He had a few little quirks, like a certain hum that was borderline, could pick up the knife and kill everyone in the house and no one would find you for weeks kind of hum. Big guy with a like if you asked him a question, it was like a huge hum kind of thing with a laugh attached that we all attempted to duplicate over the next 12 hours to see who could do it better. And we had each other doubled up on the floor because the sound was beyond comprehension. I can't repeat it, nor would it be funny to you. However, he was planning a gigantic dinner for us the first night consisting of so-called local shrimp from his friend, the shrimp magnate. Yeah, okay. Well, my friend, they're local shrimp. Meal of brick frozen solid, and he leaves them in the sink all day. Right away, I know it's Tomainville. That's to start with. That night, we came back to cook, and something happened on the phone. He had a speed out, and he backed out and drove over the keypad that opens the gate and sped away. And we were locked in. The gate locked shut. Soon thereafter, there arrives the girl cook, the breakfast chef in the group, and she said, he had to go on an emergency, I'm going to cook for you. And the eyes are ready, Maui-Wowie combo. Combo, Maui-Wowie, and a few other substances, in my opinion. It looked like she was like laid back for the night with her designated driver somewhere, and she was called in because he had to go away, and now she was there. Now, here's the weird thing. I come into the kitchen, and she's there, and I'm wearing a clean new yellow, like, shirt. And I said to her, do you have an apron I could put on for dinner? I don't want to stain my yellow shirt. She turns to me, and she says, I like my men dirty and raw. That's how I like my men, dirty and raw. I said, what? She says, that's how you guys are best, dirty and raw. I said, wow. Now, there was another guy in the group, a lot younger than me. I heard that when he reached into the refrigerator for a drink, she put her hands around his back and gave him like a rub job on the back. He got icky over that. So that was number two. So we knew already we're dealing with major league problems in the psycho department. But we figured, you know what? We'll have the meal and forget about it. I'd throw the shrimp over the side to the palm rats because I wasn't going to eat them. Well, I didn't have to bother. I didn't get a chance to eat them. Let me explain why. Because Maui-Wowie, and what she's doing in the kitchen there, I have no idea because I left. I went outside to drink wine in the dark. Ready, server ready, it's dark. We got the appetizer, the entree, Miss Private Chef. We hear her singing, and all of a sudden, boom, a crash, glass shattered. The entire shrimp dish, which must have cost $100 worth of shrimp, was on the floor with broken glass, unsalvageable. I didn't even get up. I knew what. So one of the other people, one of the young ladies, went and came back with the report from the front lines and reported that the shrimp were all on the floor with glass, and Maui Wowie chef was on her hands and knees talking to the shrimp, saying, oh, how are you, little shrimpy poos? Oh, little shrimpy poos, I'm so sorry. I said, oh, my God, did we miss a bullet here? So to make a long story short, it was wine, salad, and bread, which was better than the shrimpy poos, I can guarantee you.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor. San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech.
Savage.
Dateline Los Angeles. Daisy chain immigration destroys America. Why is immigration a topic that nobody will touch but me? Well, there's two reasons. One, because they are not aware of it, is they live in a bubble. They've all made it so big that they are insulated from the day-to-day realities of life, which I, Michael Savage, am not insulated from. I live in the realities. I work in the realities. I take home a paycheck. I'm not one of the media elite. I'm an immigrant son. And I'll tell you, daisy chain immigration is destroying everything I believe in. But, Michael, aren't we all descendants of immigrants? Madam, you may have a good heart, but your brain has been weakened and is soft. Yes, of course, we are all immigrants in America, but not all immigrants are equal. When your grandmother or great-grandmother came over here, there were checks in place. You couldn't come in with fulminating tuberculosis. You couldn't come in with AIDS. You couldn't come in with leprosy. You couldn't come in with cholera. You couldn't come in with typhoid fever. Today, not only can you come in with these diseases, but they'll be happy to give you medical care at the dock. And if you come in 9.5 months pregnant and want to pop one out on the dock, go ahead! Because that little brat will become an instant American citizen. So you can come in with disease, you can come in pregnant, you can come in broke, and they give you instant medical care, instant legal care with all of the salivating ACLU attorneys waiting at the dock to see who they could sue on behalf of the immigrant. SSI, making more money for having swum across the Rio Grande than your father gets, having fought in World War II. More than 1 million fake documents, including Social Security cards and driver's licenses, were seized during a raid of a self-storage business. The counterfeit documents included resident aliens or so-called green cards. 1 million fake documents, including Social Security cards and driver's licenses? How about Social Security cards? What does that mean to you, Mr. and Mrs. Liberal? It means that if your father fought in the Korean War, or your grandfather fought in World War II, and he's still living, which is unlikely. It means that this slime with a fake Social Security card can collect more benefits than him. That's what it means. And that really gets me pissed off. That gets me so angry, I don't know how to begin telling you. And that's why I go for joyrides every once in a while in my 65 red Cadillac convertible. Primo, by the way, 52,000 miles. You want to go on a ride with me, all you got to do is jump aboard the Savage Nation every day. I really like that. That's why I'm playing the recording of my car last night. So that's it. Social Security cards
licenses, green cards, fake documents sold, 1 million fakes. How many fakes are out there that haven't been found by the INS because they don't want to find them? How many drivers out there? How many birth certificates? How many citizens who are not citizens who voted in your election? Putting in these left-wing rats, these left-wing communist phonies all over America. You're going to hear how dangerous it really is. Huge story that won't make it to your local newspaper. They don't want to wake up the rubes. They don't want to shock the rubes of America. They want to keep you nice and, well, sort of deadened. You got streaming video pornography to keep you active during the day while you're at work. You've got live porno at night after your wife falls asleep. You've got the stupid bowl on the weekend. What more do you need? You need junk food? You got plenty of junk food. You're living like a pig in a trough. You don't want to know about the Soviet spies that coated America with hidden arms caches. What does that have to do with you, dummy? They were ready to blow up power stations. They were ready to take out leaders who opposed the Soviet Union. How do I know it's true? There was a testimony in front of Congress. And the guy giving a testimony, Colonel Lunev, had to wear a black hood. But what's going to make you crazy, as it made me, is that while Colonel Lunev, a former Soviet general, was divulging this in Congress, Henry Waxman and the other liberals who ought to be rounded up and tried for sedition were trying to make the colonel into the enemy for telling the truth. And I say, take the Henry Waxmans of America and try them for sedition today so that we have it tomorrow.
Savage. We're not doing politics really, but we are really. Well, we're not really. But if I tell you life stories, it all becomes political anyway. So I may as well just tell you life stories. I have a lot of them, and they're all real. I think we've lost our collective mind. I think 30 years of brainwashing by the stupid liberals, we've lost our collective mind. There were cops driving around helping drunks in the street instead of clubbing them and putting them into a van, washing them up and arresting them and making them do some hard work. A bum who's here illegally? It's unbelievable to me. I never saw anything like this. The wagon is seen as a police response to a common refrain that public drunkenness is a major quality of life problem in the neighborhood. You hear this? You mean people are complaining about bums in the street who are urinating and drinking all day? My God, what's wrong with how uncivil of them. And they're all blaming it on America, is that they can't make it in America. She's a disproportionate rate amongst Latinos, illegal aliens. And they can't get jobs. Well, they don't need a job when they have welfare. What do they need a job for? It's a sanctuary city for immigrants. So where would you come if you were a bum in El Salvador? If you were a bum in Mexico and you could come here and collect money and then have a cop come around and hold your hand, wouldn't you rather be a bum here than a bum in Mexico? A lot come here with the plan of being able to work and support their families back home. And for some of them, it just doesn't work out, said Officer Ortiz. Some of their comments to me have been, my wife, she finally left me. She has another man who is making money and working back at home. Boo-hoo. He says, that's when it seems like a good idea to reach for a cold can of Colt 45. Oh, my God.
Savage.
Rescue workers preparing for more accidents involving hybrid cars. And they say that the hybrid car represents a potential new danger, which is a network of high-voltage circuitry that may require some precise cutting to save a trapped victim. Gee, and I thought that they were the panacea. I actually did. I would never buy one, but since Barbara Boxer herself said she drives one, and she must know, I mean, she's a real environmentalist. I think she was once seen in the backdrop of the environment. She would know about the environment better than anybody. She said they were great, but apparently they're dangerous because the battery powering the electric motor carries as much as 500 volts. That's like a little mini San Quentin in its own way. Maybe there's a conclusion to this that we can draw, which is take all of the people on death row and give them a one-shot deal, which is that we let you drive around in a hybrid car, and then you get into an accident. You have to hit a wall at 10 or 20 miles an hour, and then we try to extricate you. And if we can extricate you and you live, we free you from death row. Or on the other hand, if it's like old Sparky, it's too bad. That might be something in America. And we could sell it as a pay-per-view act, you know, $29.99 to see the people on death row trying to be extricated from hybrid cars. That might be a scream, you know, with money going to the Gorilla Fund or something like that. But don't laugh about the Gorilla Fund. I actually give to it. It's one of the few charities I give to. Gorillas and elephants. I have a soft spot for gorillas and elephants. Elephants and gorillas. Gorillas and elephants. Something in me is soft on elephants and soft on gorillas. Chimps, too, I like. I like chimpanzees. They're all endangered. they're cooking him as meat in Africa now.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
So here we go, here we go, here we go. Obama's first 10 executive orders, if he became president, God forbid. What do you think they're going to be? You think he's just going to sit by? No, he's not going to sit by. He wants change. And we all know change can be anything. That's why he says he wants change. Now, what does McCain want? We don't know. How do we know? How can we know? How can we know what McCain wants when he won't come before the Savage Nation? We know he goes on Letterman. We know he goes on the other ha-ha-ho-ho-ho-ho shows because they don't ask him anything. He jokes. McCain tells jokes. I swear to you, he tells jokes. McCain jokes. He jokes, but he won't tell you the truth. Why won't he tell you the truth? Because he jokes. Why wouldn't he joke if he can get away with joking with jokesters who need smart, ugly men to write their jokes for them? See, they all have smart, ugly men who write their jokes. And if you get a man who has a smart, ugly man who writes his jokes for him, interviewing a man who has smart, ugly men and women who tell him what shows to go on to joke, why, then you get no answers. All you get are jokes. And that's why we consider our politicians jokes. And that's why we are not excited about this election. And that's why we say that if McCain continues to joke, we're not going to vote for the bloke. Because why vote for a bloke who only jokes? Where does McCain stand, for example, on federal hate crimes legislation? Where does McCain stand on an amnesty for illegal aliens, for example? Where does McCain stand on affirmative action, for example? Where does McCain stand on the homosexual marriage issue, for example? Where does McCain stand on handguns, for example? Where does McCain stand on the issue of Iran, for example? Where does McCain stand on foreign aid, for example? Where does McCain stand on gays in the military, for example? Why, you wouldn't know, would you? How could you know? How could you know if he goes on jokester shows? Jokester shows that are written by ugly men with good brains, written for men who are pretty with no brains. Interviewing politicians who are neither pretty nor brainy. They're both not pretty and not brainy. They're just politicians. So therefore, how can we, the people, know who to vote for? The answer is we can't. So the hysteria of a man who says he will bring us change is what we have. We don't know what the change will be. We don't know whether it's good change or bad change, but we want change. After all, Bush is the most unpopular president in history, isn't he? Well, he is, isn't he? He is, isn't he? Yeah, therefore, we want change. Yeah, change. Well, what kind of change? We don't know, but we want it. We may be going over the cliff like lemmings, but it's change, and that's the important thing, isn't it? We all need change. After all, we have to admit we want change. And on one side, we have a vigorous young man who will bring us change. On the other hand, we have an old man who we don't know what he stands for, but we know that he tells jokes on shows written by men who are ugly with good brains and performed by men who are neither brainy or pretty, but they tell jokes, and that's the important thing. So what is it that you fear the most about Barack Hussein Obama? In other words, if he becomes president because of the default of the Republican Party, I said default, not the fault. Remember what I just said, because of default by the Republican Party. I didn't say because of the fault of the Republican Party. I said because of default by the Republican Party, and default is not the same as the fault. In fact, if you look up default, you see it's very different from the fault. It's default, which is an act of aggression on the part of the Republican Party, who now wants to throw the hot potato at the Democrats, because that's the way the dance is danced. 8 years of this party, then 8 years of that party, then 8 years of this party, then 8 years of that party, and presto, magico, you wake up and there's no America. Borders gone, language gone, culture gone. Why? Because that's the way of the world. Is that the way of the world? No, it's the way of the corrupt politician. It's the way of the international corrupt politician. It's the way of the corrupt international politician. That's not my way. Is it your way? It certainly isn't my way. Is it your way? Whose way is it? Well, we don't know whose way it is, but we know that's the way we're going. Why? Because both parties are given over to flooding America with illegal aliens, dissolving our borders, muddying the language, and destroying our culture. Why? Because that's the way of the world. Is it the way of the world? It's not my way. Is it your way? No, it's their way. Who's they? Why, the politicians. That's why they say they want change. They won't tell us what the change is, but we know what the change is going to be, unless we, the people, put up a candidate who can stand up to them. Ah, that's impossible. Sure, it's impossible.
It's a government of Goldman Sachs, by Goldman Sachs, and for Goldman Sachs. Who's Goldman? Who's Sachs? Don't know. Who's Sachs? I don't know. Who's Goldman? I don't know. Who are they? Have no idea, but they run the country. How do you know? Take a look at the policies, and you'll see it's a government of Goldman Sachs, by Goldman Sachs, and for Goldman Sachs. Who's Goldman? I don't know. Who's Sachs? I don't know, but they run the country. How do you know? Because they put Treasury secretaries in, one, two, three. Therefore, they run the economy. Therefore, they run the country. And what's good for Goldman Sachs may not necessarily be good for America. No matter what you say, I'm telling you, we're liable to go away. That's why I say, what are the top 10 executive orders that Obama is liable to pass in the first 100 days of his particular election, if he wins, God forbid? Well, they're easy to find out. We know he says he wants change. Go on his own website. I've done it for you. Go to michaelsavage.com. You'll see them. One, Obama says he's going to enact stronger federal hate crimes legislation. Now, what does that mean? That means that some people are more equal than others. That means people of color have more federal protection than people of no color, white people. That's because to some liberals, in fact, to all liberals, whites are four-fifths a human, and only people of color are entitled to federal protection. He also says that he's going to follow through on his pledge to meet with the leaders of all nations, friends and foe alike, and that we'll sign a non-aggression pact with the Hitler of Iran. Is that good for America or bad for America? Why? Just ask yourself if it would have been good to sign a non-aggression pact with Hitler. Some tried it, by the way. Oh, yes, some tried it, and it didn't stop Hitler's aggression. He just laughed all the way to the armory. Now, why did he do that? Because he knew that anyone who would sign a non-aggression pact with him was a weakling and a putz, and that's why he signed non-aggression treaties with any idiot who came his way, including Lord Haw-Haw. Now, who is Lord Haw-Haw? Why, Lord Haw-Haw was, of course, an English politician, a minister, who had a certain name, and he went to England and he came back. Do we have that little tape of Lord Haw-Haw coming back from England saying, I've just come back from England, I've just come back from Germany, and President Hitler said to me that he means no more war, and now it's good for England and good for Germany? Sure, but Obama didn't read that. He was busy working the wards of Chicago. He was busy giving out sub sandwiches. He was busy giving out pints of whiskey. He was giving out promise and hope and change. All these years, he never read that. He didn't know about him. Never heard of him. Doesn't know about him. He never heard of Winston Churchill. He never heard about the prime minister. He never heard about the man who was not the prime minister who tried to undermine the prime minister. All he did was say that he came to Germany. He signed a pact with Hitler who said he would not invade. And guess what? Hitler invaded anyway. But Obama said that he will sign a non-aggression pact with the Hitler of Iran. He has not learned history. And I warn you, those who do not learn the history are condemned to repeat it. Go ahead and repeat your history, moron. But don't say I didn't warn you.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
So we spent an hour talking about Barack Hussein Obama, and I asked you a question. Why is it an irrelevant question? What is Hussein? Where did he get the name from? Why is it not right to ask the question? And I posed the question, what if John McCain's middle name was Jesus? What if it was John Jesus McCain? Do you suppose the liberals would be saying, what does that mean? Do you want to convert us all? Are you a fanatic Christian, Mr. McCain? Well, then it would become a question. It was John Jesus McCain, they'd be asking the question. But it's Barack Hussein Obama. How dare you ask that question? Well, so we're not going to talk about that anymore. We had a good time with that. We're now going to move on to beer, wine, guns, boats, beer, boats, wine, guns, cameras, stuff I never talk about because I'm so tired of the other stuff. I'm so tired of it that I'm going to do what is – you can't do this during an election season. You're supposed to only talk about, well, she's up, he's down. No, she's down, he's up. No, he's up, she's down, he's sideways. Okay, let the others do it. If that's all they want to do, let them enjoy it. I don't care what their ratings are. I can't do it. So let's go to the callers, okay? Chicago, Thomas, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to talk about my boat. The first boat I had was a 1972 Chris-Craft with double Rolls-Royce engines, actually.
And, wow. Rolls-Royce engines? That wasn't factory, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was actually a boat that I inherited from a wealthy side of my family. I really didn't even know what to do with the boat.
That is amazing. But do Rolls-Royce engines do well in a marine environment?
Yeah, honestly, Mike.
No, I would imagine so. They use them in the air. What am I asking? Of course they must do well anywhere.
Rolls-Royce engines is the most amazing boat. But at the time, it was a little bit over my head. It's a 38-foot boat. The maintenance, all of that stuff was just crazy. But when you said you wanted to talk about guns, I mean, there's the new SIG 9mm, single action, double action.
Okay. Oh, you've touched the raw nerve. I went and bought a SIG P-232 with a 380 cartridge. I can't use the gun. I don't like it. I don't like double action guns at all.
Yeah.
Don't like them. I'm going to return the gun. No, I'm going to try and trade it back. I've never fired it. I just don't like the gun. I have, and I've had it for 25 years. My favorite handgun is really basic. It's the Colt Combat Commander 45. That is a weapon that is – I don't think there's anything you can beat it. WOR, Bob, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I have a Glock 19. I'm an NYU graduate. I went in there as a moderate, came out to the right of you. But
how did that – wait, you must have majored in engineering, certainly not in sociology.
Well, I took a class in sociology, and it was filled with communist professors, and they're really brainwashing, young, innocent minds.
Well, that's why there are so many suicides at NYU. I'm sorry to say, why are they throwing themselves off buildings there? How can the kids take it?
I don't know if it's that or the tuition, Mike, but I want to talk about the reason why. I hear you like a Colt 45, and those are excellent firearms. But when it comes to home defense, you need a good flashlight, and I like a Glock 19.
Well, let's talk about it. Many people listening to this show are experts in guns, and many of them are not, and some are thinking about getting a handgun. There's something to be said for a semi-automatic handgun and something to be said for a revolver. Why is a revolver something people consider having by their nightstand as opposed to a semi-automatic? You could answer that very simply. Why?
Because
a revolver is a point and shoot gun. You don't have to pull back on the gun. You just pick it up and fire it. A semi-automatic, you're going to have to pull back unless you leave it charged, which I would never do. With a round in the chamber. I would never leave a semi-automatic with a round in the chamber spring-loaded like that. I just wouldn't do it. But on the other hand, a revolver is much more reliable in that regard. They're not going to jam on you generally. 5 shots, 6 shots max, as opposed to 14 shots, so that's a disadvantage. They say that the shotgun is still your best friend in a bedroom. A nice old shotgun, pump shotgun, best friend in the dark. 1-800-449-8255 phone number. Any topic is fair game. Guns, cars, cameras. You want to talk about cameras? Cameras have changed to such an extent that I don't know there's much to talk about. Everything's automatic today. I'm using a Nikon D70 that I bought about two, three years ago, whenever it came out. It's far more complicated than my little Sony, but the new gigabytes on the little tiny Sony are astounding. And on my website, michaelsavage.com, the pictures you're seeing so far are with the Nikon D70. But I have a whole panel of pictures coming up with my little Sony. I think it's a 9 gigabyte, small, it's the size of a credit card. I never saw a camera like this. But I still like the heft and feel of a big camera. Although if you want to take a picture of a bum in San Francisco, I would suggest you get a smaller camera. Because you can get away with more. You don't have to like aim it, You can sort of like hold it. That's the better one to use if you're taking anonymous pictures. The credit card size camera is better. So what would you like to talk about? We can go back to politics, Hussein Obama, if you'd like. I mean, that's fine. Again, I raise the question, why is it inappropriate to raise the issue of his middle name? If John McCain's middle name had been or were Jesus, John Jesus McCain, would his middle name be an issue? I think so. I think that the liberals would have a diarrhea fit. They would go insane.
Oh, your name is John Jesus McCain? Oh, does that mean you want to convert us? What? That's frightening.
It would become an issue, I'm sure of it, the way Mr. Romney's Mormonism became an issue to the radicals at the New York Times. So that's why it was, such a question. Let's see, what else do we have? Obama. Could you get pictures of Obama off my website except for that one article? You know, He looks like Alfred E. Newman to me with the big ears. He's not a very good-looking guy. I mean, I told you 1,000 times it's not about the fact that he's multiracial to me. I would vote for a black man in a second if he were a conservative. I would. You have to just take me on my word. I'd vote for a black woman if she could save America. I don't care what their race is. I don't happen to like the man's communist policies, that's all. I don't happen to like the bag men that have associated with him in Chicago. I don't like the fact that he has a nasty wife who seems to have a distemper for America and thinks it's only good now that her husband's getting attention. There's a lot of things that I don't really like about the guy, if you don't mind. Now, I recognize that many of you think he walks on water and that he can cure arthritis if you just go to one of his rallies. I'm not one of those, you know. So let's talk about boats for another minute or two. Tim, Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. Yeah, I was wondering, have you ever touched on power cats? Because I know that they're really hot in Australia, and you can get, you know, you got a shallow draft, 4-foot draft on a 65-footer, and you can use a couple 700-horsepower Cummins. And you
What is that? Oh, a catamaran?
Power cats, yeah. They're really popular in Australia.
You know, it's funny you should ask. When I lived years ago in the tropics, catamarans were very popular amongst the sailing folks. There was something about it that was not traditional that I couldn't relate to, the double hull. I know they sailed flat and people loved them. I just never related to them. To me, a boat has to have a single hull to be a boat. I can't relate to it. There's certain things that don't compute in my head. One of them is a double-hulled sailing, a double-hulled vessel.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering, what size is your Grand Banks?
It's a Europa 42.
Those are beautiful. Yeah, my dream is to have a custom-built yacht by Delta Marine or Delta Outdoor.
Oh, yeah, they're magnificent, gigantic, though. Well, you're talking about a 150-foot boat, though.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.
Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, and drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God hath already accepted thy works. Now listen to this. This is so beautiful, but you're never going to hear this in the media. Enjoy life with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun. Enjoy life with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun, all the days of thy vanity, for that is thy portion in life. Now, when have you heard to enjoy life with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life? You've never heard it. Maybe in a church you heard it. But the money sources, the money power, the media, for example, treats women like garbage, like they're exchangeable toys. You're tired of her, throw her out and get a younger one. You're tired of her, get rid of her, go run around. You're tired of her, become gay. You're tired of her, go to Thailand and have a sex tour. Why don't you read this? Enjoy life with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity. Why don't you see that anywhere? The answer is because the verminous pornographers who own the liberals, who fund the ACLU, have taken down even the Ten Commandments from the religious from the judges who are religious in this country. I mean, we've had and we still have judges who believe in God and believe in the law. But those who put up the Ten Commandments are mocked and attacked by the verminous scum from NYU, from Columbia, from Harvard, from Stanford, from all the lowest law schools in the land produce the sickest minds. Oh, they think they're brilliant because they manipulated their way into a law school and they can write a brief and this and that. They're on the law review. But when you analyze what they're doing to society, they're actually the stupidest people in the country when they debase their own nation. And what do they do with their genius? What do they do with their genius? They go after judges in the South who have a little Ten Commandments somewhere in the courtroom to keep things straight. I guarantee you Judge Kaczynski wouldn't have a Ten Commandments in his courtroom. No, he'd probably have... Well, we'll let it go with that. This is a family show. But if you want to see this, go to Ecclesiastes 9. Enjoy life with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun, all the days of thy vanity, for that is thy portion in life. And in thy labor, wherein thou laborest under the sun. So there's glorification of work here as well. Love, loyalty, work. For whatever thou hand attaineth to do by thy strength, that do. For there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. In other words, don't complain that you're working too hard, because when you're dead, you won't be able to complain anymore. Listen to this one. For to him that is joined to all the living, there is hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything. For the dead know not anything. It's amazing stuff. There's such poetry here. And then you turn to Shakespeare. To be or not to be, that's the question. Is it nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against the sea of troubles, and by opposing end them? To die, to sleep no more, and by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished. To die, to sleep, perchance to dream, that's the rub. For in that sleep of death what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil. It gives us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time? The oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delay, the insolence of office, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes when he himself might his quietus make with a bare needle. Who would bear this to grunt and sweat under a weary life, but that the dread of something after death, the undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveler returns, puzzles the will and makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others that we know not of. Thus conscience thus make cowards of us all, and thus the native hue of resolution is sicklied over with the pale cast of thought, and enterprise of great pith and moment with disregard their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. Lose the name of action. Forgive me for not speaking the king's English. I speak the English of the ordinary man. I do not change my brogue to satisfy the times, nor do I change my emotions to satisfy the climes. Devoutly to be wished. And what was he complaining about? What was Hamlet complaining about through Shakespeare? What was Shakespeare complaining about, through Hamlet? And how does it relate to the judge? Well, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, if you're heartbroken, the law's delay. I've been sitting here waiting for 3 months to a judge in the same district court, by the way, to drop this one on me. The insolence of office, there you go, your senators, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes. But we don't kill ourselves, do we? Well, it's not because we're afraid of what might be in the next world. That's certainly not what keeps people from killing themselves. I mean, to an atheist, this might be the reason for fear of what might await them in the next world. It's because we are not allowed to kill ourselves if we're religious, Christians or Jews. Period, end of story. It's out of the. A Muslim as well is not permitted to kill himself. And I found out from a biblical scholar why. Because we do not own our property, which is us. God owns us. Does that answer your question? Just listen to this and weep. Listen to this headline. Are we prepared for many more people living to 100 and beyond? For parent-child dynamics, sibling rivalries, and other relationships that go on and on and on? Question mark. What are they implying? That we should kill off the old because they're of no use to the sexually liberated? Are they insane? What kind of headline is that? Are we ready for it? What do you want to do, turn them into fertilizer? Then they show an old dude, they're 100 years old, still practicing law in Boston. You know, I actually made a note. This is very inspiring because it means I could be in talk radio for another 50 years. He's still with his son practicing law. Here they are. He had a heart attack 40 years ago, and he's still practicing law at 100. I like that because when my father got a heart attack, I remember I was so freaked out, and I went to the hospital, and it was like, you know, no one knew much about heart attacks then. And the doctor, we were hanging there. He was our only breadwinner. We had no medical insurance, nothing. And he said to us, a heart attack is like a blowout in a tire. We can patch it up, son, and put it back on the family car, but we don't know when that tire may blow out again. That was very reassuring. You know, I was an insomniac from that moment on for the rest of my life. I love that story that he's 100 and he's still practicing lua. He started practicing lua in 1923, I hear, according to this article here. When Ruby started practicing lua in 1926, his clients were young men, many of them Jewish immigrants, working what was then Boston's thriving garment business. Today, the firm has shrunk to a bare-bones staff of two, Ruby and Bill, that's his son, who work out of an office otherwise known as Ruby's living room. He's 100 years old. Bill is 73, that's the son. I love this guy. He enjoys pinstripe suits, devotes a few hours each day to trusts and estates, keeping his family business alive. It added years to my life reading this story for three reasons. A, people are working longer because your brain doesn't go unless you want it to go. If you hate your children enough, you'll get Alzheimer's at 50. Or if you hate your wife enough, you get Alzheimer's at about 43. Oh, what? Honey, I'm putting on your brassiere and slippers now. Anything to avoid sleeping with you. Where am I, huh? Who's that horrible child? I don't want to know. I'm going to put... You get Alzheimer's at 46 if you have the wrong wife. But if you're blessed, you could keep working until you die. If your mind doesn't go, really. The mind is the last thing to go. Unbelievable. He still walks to work, walks home from work. So there's two things I like. Ruby did miss several months of work about four decades ago when he suffered a heart attack. 40 years ago? He's still working at 100? So that means if I get a heart attack soon, I could still live like another 40 years. Because I said, my father, God rest his soul, when he got the heart attack, that doctor should rot in hell. The blowout story. Yes, we have put a patch on an inner tube, young savage. However, we do not know how long that patch may hold. Never slept another night in my life. Not another night did I sleep all through the night. All night long, I listened to my own heartbeat. Thump, thump, you know, waiting for the blowout. That rat, that doctor, those. They didn't know from anything. Nothing, morons. You know, smoke a Chesterfield, your doctor does. I don't know if they know anymore today. They still don't give you any good advice. You think they tell you about homocysteine and B6 and niacin? Nothing. They still tell you nothing. They still tell you nothing. Just burn, cut, and poison. That's all. That vitamin stuff is all hogwash, believe me. Just follow us and we'll cut you open when you need it. The medical establishment is still backwards. There's still a bunch of bloodthirsty, greedy fools mostly. Not all. About 98%. You got to make a buck. Look, when you turn a profession like that, think about it, into a business, where the more sick the person is, the more money you make. You think you're going to make someone well unless you're a saint? And how many saints are there in any business? Can you imagine if I do this for another 50 years or so? Can you imagine what that'll be like? You're liable to be a grandfather. You could be 15 now. You could be a grandfather, and I'll still be on the radio.